board to some of the industry's most successful individuals with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Want to know a secret? The Massachusetts Breeding Program pays huge bonuses for finishing first, second, or third at any racetrack in the country. You didn't know that, did you? Massbreds get paid up to an additional 25% of their purse earnings for the owner and breeder and stallion owner and developer. It's the best kept secret in racing till now. Tell all your friends, and to learn more, visit massbreds.com. Nominate now for Penn National's biggest day of the season, the $400,000 Grade 2 Penn Mile and the $150,000 Penn Oaks will both run Friday, June 2nd, on a card that also includes four Pennsylvania bread stakes, each with a $100,000 purse. Call the racing office at Hollywood Casino at Penn National Racecourse, 800-233-8238. That's 800-233-8238. Nominations close May 17th.
Would you believe that champions weren't measured by rings, but by a crown? That the history books were written on dirt? That the greatest of all time was a horse?
He is having like a tremendous machine.
Experience the magic at this year's Belmont Stakes as we honor the 50th anniversary of Secretariat's legendary Triple Crown triumph. Join the celebration at Belmont Park on Saturday, June 10th. Tickets on sale now at BelmontStakes.com.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
An hour, actually. So I guess we had 2 hours in the books. And Rich Migliori will join us probably in about 20 minutes. He's driving back from Belmont, actually. He spent the night in the cottage, as many of you, anybody that follows Rich on Twitter is aware. And so let's see if we can't flip-flop and get John in here. We'll come back to Mig, and Mike Welch is taping the clocker report for the morning, and we'll hopefully get him when he gets wrapped up with that. So if he gets it in one take, which happens to be a running joke when it comes to Mike and Barbara Livingston is the videographer. When it comes to Mike's clocker report, and Mike, I guess yesterday Mike went through the whole thing, you know, like 6 minutes worth, not one misstep, and then he mentioned the wrong rider on a horse that worked out. He had the rider that is going to be on the horse. I forget even which horse. So I think it was an Oaks horse. And he gets to the end, and he mentions the afternoon jock instead of the workout rider, and he had to tape the whole thing over again. So it's like a running gag between Barbara Livingston and Mike, how many takes it does take to get the video done. So hopefully we'll get Mike. I want to get that done this morning because the heavy lifting, obviously, with the works is over. Although Rocket Can, added yesterday, got a work in. The lone Derby worker, and then tomorrow it looks like Sun Thunder and apparently the Japanese. The Japanese are expected to do something with some of their unconventional training methods. We will probably get a flourish of some ilk from the Japanese. Continuar and Derma Sotagaki. And speaking of, not unconventional, because John White has been delivering his Derby strike system for years and years with us, as well as helping us get ready for what to expect on the pricing standpoint. And he joins us now. John, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Really enjoyed that round table that you had earlier. A lot of good stuff in that.
They were fabulous. Kevin Kilroy, who does such a great job for Churchill down at Fairgrounds, and he's a part-timer. I mean, I'd say he's working about 48% now in racing. And then, of course, Byron King for years and years, whether in DRF and now of late, these last several years at Bloodhorse and Scully. So, and what's fun about that trio was that three kind of different approaches and perspectives. And, Byron's interesting because from a handicapping standpoint, he was the lead handicapper here for, as he explained, 24 years for the Daily Racing Form, and has done did plenty of writing. You know, Dave Grenig is interesting that way because Dave, for years as a correspondent, but then ever since he started clocking, as part of the clocking report, I mean, Dave has gotten more serious about his horseplay. So, everybody comes from different angles and different approaches to the to the game, and that's what makes it, that's what makes it interesting when you hear the approaches and the rationale that everybody has when they make these decisions and build their tickets.
Well, David Grenning, Marty McGee, Byron King, Jay Pribman, these are four individuals that are both excellent writers but also excellent handicappers. So they bring that to the table. I go way back with Byron. He and I worked in the Phoenix office when it was the national office of the Daily Racing Form in the late 1990s. And when I hear how old his children are, it makes me just want to throw up, because it's hard to believe he's got two youngsters at that kind of age. And he's been in my fantasy league, horse racing fantasy league, for many years. He's like won the most titles ever in my fantasy league. He's always a guy to be reckoned with in that league. And he had a bad year last year, and he's kind of struggling this year, but he's a guy always to keep an eye on because he is a one sharp individual, that is for sure. So I say, I really enjoyed that roundtable. You guys covered a lot of things, from pace and possible prices for these horses and so forth. So you guys covered a lot of ground and covered it very well.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I appreciate it. Let's and Byron is listening in, and he said
that rascal.
You still got 2/3 of the season, a little less, to go.
Listen, Steve. I got to tell you this with Byron. When he and I were working in the Racing Form office in Phoenix, Turf Paradise did not co-mingle with Santa Anita, Del Mar, or Hollywood Park. So when they had a Pick 6 carryover, you couldn't bet it at Turf Paradise. So another Daily Racing Form handicapper, James Ambroff Tahan, Byron and myself, we took a road trip to Rito because Rito did co-mingle with the Southern California tracks. And so we spent the day at Rito, and one of my fondest memories of that was our friend Jim hit a really good pick three. This was back in the days before we had these pick fours, pick fives, and so forth. Basically, you had the pick six, but you didn't have much else in the way of multi-race wagers other than a pick three and rolling doubles. And Jim had made a nice score with several hundred dollars. So I went up to the window with him for him to collect. And to say that the racetrack at Rito, I mean, that's one of the smaller tracks you're going to come across in the country, really, in terms of, you know, I mean, it's just a low-key track. And so Jim goes up to this female mutual clerk and hands her his ticket. And she says, oh, congratulations, that's really good. And then she looks at Jim and she looks at the amount that she's going to have to pay him, several hundred dollars. And she keeps looking back and forth. And finally, she reaches in under her blouse into her bra and pulls out several hundred dollars to pay off Jim. And that's the only time I've seen a mutual clerk reach into their blouse to pay a guy off. And I said, Jim, you don't see this every day. I got to tell you that.
Too funny. Well, John, we got an hour, and I've got tons to do, and let's get some thoughts from you as we wait the draw 3 hours from now. Where are we, and anything that's gone on that's changed your opinion, and give everybody a refresher on the strikes as well.
Well, in terms of the strike,
John, do me a favor. Let me.
Yes.
I'm going to put you on hold. You can listen in. Here's Mike Welch. Let me get.
Good.
Yeah. This is not that. No, you're good, John. It's 8 o'clock in the morning in California. John's fine.
I don't know who John.
John White.
Oh, John White.
Oh, okay. Hey, John.
Hey, Mike. How are you?
Cold. It is. It's not a nice morning here. Mike, let's catch up first of all on the fillies from the other morning, and before we do anything else, just give a quick rundown what we saw, because there were some interesting pairings, and a couple of fillies kind of elevated, I think, opinions of themselves.
Let me get to my notes. Going down from the top down, I mean, Defining Purpose, I like what I saw from her. Her half mile breeze the other day, she went in 47, I think I had her, and finished well, did it easy, and bounced out of the work looking good this morning. I mean, she looked good going into the work, too. She's full of energy. And
every morning we've talked about it.
Yeah, she seems to be thriving right now, so I like what I saw from her. South Lawn has trained well. I mean, she had just a kind of a maintenance work the other day after a very fast one the week before, which I did not see. I wish I had been here, but she worked the day before I got here, unfortunately. But I like what I've seen from her since then, and she was really strong this morning. Ryder had to keep her out way off the rail, I think, to keep her from doing way too much. But she impressed me this morning. Wonder Wheel took the morning off today, so keep an eye on that. But I think that was by design. I don't think there's any issue there. Grabbing notes here on... And who was Botanical? I liked what I saw from her.
You gave her the
yeah. I thought she trained
work of the day.
I thought she trained really well, and she looked good this morning too. Obviously handling the main track without any issue. So I think she's a horse. I think I may hold in a little higher regard than maybe the odds makers do at this point. But we'll see. Darth Vader. She really likes this cold weather better than I do. She was on her toes yesterday and even more so today. And I wrote earlier on Twitter that trainer Michael Yates is reaching out for Luis Saez to ride her if and only if Julia Shining does not get in. If Julia Shining gets in and she's two spots removed, then she will. Louis will ride Julia Shining, and Jose Ortiz will back him up, and he will ride Darth Vader.
And I retweeted that earlier this morning, and then I also was reminded, or at least I, in going through my stuff,
the alley's look. I spoke to Kieran McLaughlin to verify all this, and Kieran said we did work the alley's look the other day, but we are riding Darth Vader, so that's. I got a confirmation from him.
So we basically have to hear what, because he's been listed on Ali's look in the notebook.
Yeah, I really don't know what happened there, and I think obviously his first call is to Julia Shining and Todd, and maybe at some point Brad decided, you know, if you can't give me a definite, I gotta grab somebody else in case Julia Shining gets in. So, but I don't know the particulars. All I know is, you know, what Michael Yates told me, and he actually asked me, can you confirm it from Kieran with me? So I called Kieran, and that's what he said.
Well, and so that would, I'm just going to speculate that Florent Giroux is going to get basically
that would seem to make the most sense.
Him.
Yeah, that would seem to make the most sense.
Very
but again,
good.
I did not. I probably should have called Brad after all of that, but I just had other stuff I was involved with and couldn't do it.
No problem. All right.
Oh, Gambling Girl too has looked really, really good in the last couple of mornings.
You know, and John, maybe we'll get John White afterward to look at the Oaks odds, because Gambling Girl, you're going to end up with a Rapoli Pletcher horse that is going to be overlooked in this group.
Yeah, no, I you know,
right?
I thought she's doing really well. She worked with Julia Shining the other day, and both seemed to go okay. Nothing special. It was kind of more maintenance-like moves. They had worked the week before too. But just looking at the gallops, and that's all I'm going by from what I've seen the last 2 days. And I didn't really get a good look at Julia Shining today, but Gambling Girl I did, and yesterday I liked them both, so we'll see.
Mike, Pretty Mischievous, who I'm going to end up picking in the Oaks, and just, I mean, she is, to me, she floats over the track. She's looked fabulous. I watched her schooling the other morning. A lot to like.
Yeah, she came by me today. I didn't get a good look at her this morning. She worked well. And, yeah, she's definitely very live in here. I have not finished my handicapping for the race yet, so I'm not sure which way I'd be leaning. Other than if Botanical's a big price, I'd have to take a little shot at her the way she looked working the other day for Brad.
That's your style. There's going to be some late arrivals that we're only going to get to see gallop for the next several days. That's like Affirmative Lady, Promise Her America. From Ray Handel and Affirmative Lady, of course, Grand Motion. We've gone all this way, and we've mentioned Brad Cox fillies, except for the favorite, Wet Paint.
Wet Paint, you know, she's been fine. Nothing, you know, special. Again, I think I only saw her last work. I didn't see the one before that. It was fine. She looked good this morning. You know, all three of them were out there. She was galloping, and the Alley's Look was right behind her, and then came Botanical.
We got to see the. The Peter Miller as well for...
She was out there today. I saw her come by. She was jogging the wrong way on the outside fence. I'm not sure if she ever turned around and galloped today or not, but she definitely was out there this morning.
You know who we should talk about that's been here, she's been here for weeks, is the Fincher filly, Flying Connection, that nobody's talking about.
No. I did see her come by today, again, with all the horses out there training at the same time. I didn't get a great look at her. I'm trying to remember my thoughts on her work. I think I did like it, but I just can't recall off the top of my head.
Coming in from Sunland, 85 buyer in the wire-to-wire Sunland Oaks victory, and Florent Giroux was supposed to be aboard her. So
Well, maybe he is. Yeah, I haven't seen all those riding assignments.
All right,
but,
I'm going to dig that up.
I'm just going by what Louis' agent told me and Michael Yates told me this morning. It looks like he's on. And she's trained terrific. We mentioned it the other day. She's a great workhorse. She certainly hasn't lost any of her energy in the morning. Working wise, or obviously galloping wise today. I mean, a mile and an eighth is the big question with her. She couldn't be doing better, but that might be a little bit of a stretch for Darth Vader.
To round out horses that have been working and we've been seeing regularly, everybody's talking about Derma Sotagaki and making decisions about the Japanese. Nobody's talked about Mimi Kakushi.
Yeah, her work was just very average looking to me, and I don't know her, you know, so that just might be her. You know, she went a half and 50-something. She went slow early, picked it up a little bit when asked down the lane, did not gallop out at all, and that might have been purposefully. I mean, they did kind of take her right off the rail and pulled her up pretty quick. So I watched her again today galloping. I mean, she won't, you know, wow you by watching her gallop.
Finally, I'm going to bring her up again, because should she get in, Taxed from Randy Morse worked beautifully the other morning.
Yeah, I just saw her... gallop briefly today. I didn't really get a good look at her either.
She's very nice. It might be hard pressed to get in. All right, let's turn our attention to the boys and to the main event. And of course, Saturday, a very busy morning. We had a bunch of sets from Pletcher, of course. Let's actually start with that conversation.
Which one?
Start with Forte. And in fact, I'm going to ask you a question that somebody sent to me. Somebody got an interesting question from somebody that remarked that they have heard, quote unquote, that Forte does not look as robust as he did midwinter.
I don't see him train on a regular basis during the winter.
He's up at Palm Beach Downs.
I talked to Brian Walls, who clocks at Palmetto's and gets over there for a lot of Todd's works, and he said, you know, he's not a flashy workhorse, and we've kind of talked about that here. He had a maintenance work before he left Florida. He had his big work the next week, and he was pretty good. The other day, certainly wouldn't, you know, jump out of your skin over his work the other day, but it was more like a maintenance work, too. And why not? You know, what do you need to do? The horse is obviously at the top of the division. He hasn't lost in a long time. Why do you need to do anything different but to maintain where you're at? And that's certainly what they seem to be doing. But again, he just isn't the kind of horse that would, you know, if you didn't have a saddle towel on him and know who he was, you wouldn't be jumping out of your skin to say, who was that? I want to know who he is. I want to play him in the Derby. But he just knows how to win. He gets the job done. He saves his best for the afternoon. And he seems to be doing just fine, although, you know, obviously there's some others that you might say are working better. I you know, again, this is not having seen him all winter, but, again, this is probably just him, and I wouldn't be too concerned over that.
All right.
Weight-wise, I couldn't say. I just didn't see him enough during the winter. A big concern for him, though, he did get excited, you know, a little little worked up before both the Fountain of Youth and the Florida Derby, and you want to keep an eye on that in the paddock here on Saturday.
Go through the Pletchers. Tappet Trice has made a tremendous impression.
Again, I don't see him trying either, but from what I've seen since I've been here, just the way he moves, just his energy level, he seems to have come out of a very hard race in the Bluegrass, just doing better and better. And, you know, the main concern for him is, you know, if he can get out of the gate cleanly enough to get some early position and not have his chances so totally compromised going into that first turn, that there's going to be left with too much to do. I mean, we saw that sort of happen to Forte a little bit in the Florida Derby, and he was able to overcome it. But it's a lot tougher to overcome things like that in the 20-horse field going a mile and a quarter in a race like the Derby. So the first quarter mile is going to be key for Tappet Trice. Actually, today the post position draw might be key for Tappet Trice. I know they want him to be on the outside somewhere. They don't want him to get buried down inside early.
That has been, as the question has come up and we've gotten out ahead of the draw, it's the universal answer. Who is it most at risk at the draw? And it's Tappet Trice.
I mean, there are some others with similar styles, too, that would be at risk also being inside. But he definitely comes to mind first and foremost.
Kings Barnes worked with Major Dude.
Major Dude.
And Major Dude, he's our Teppan for 2023.
Yeah, I mean, look, he's holding his own with Kings Barnes, and you know, he's ostensibly a turf specialist. He's had two graded stakes wins on the grass, but he's impressed me. I mean, you're talking about working with a horse that's 3-for-3 and won the Louisiana Derby by a quarter of a pole. So,
and a free running horse that he's keeping tabs with.
Right, and they both went out 6 furlongs the other day. They were asked some to go, but they showed good energy going out the 3/4 at the end of their half mile works, and probably could have gone further. I think Todd said he just told the riders to just shut him down at that point. You're a week out from the race. You really don't want to do any more than that. But they both look good. I got no knocks against either of those two. And Major Doodle will most likely wind up in the American Derby on the grass. And that race is coming up pretty salty, too. You actually may get a little price on Major Dude in that spot, but whether he's good enough to beat some of those top turf horses, I don't know, but he couldn't be doing any better going in from what I've seen.
And gets us the Kings Barnes, who is being asked to, you know, compete in the Derby in his fourth start. He and Mage are in the same kettle of fish, so to speak, the same pressure cooker, and I just keep bringing up materiality. That's all. The only thing I can think of is materiality.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's historically, statistically, They're both up against it. And, you know, Mage really had to work hard. The one thing for Kings Barnes is, you know, he had a pretty easy trip at that last race, maybe not taking as much out of him. Mage really had to work hard for that second place finish in the Florida Derby. And at some point, it's got to take its toll. I mean, he looked high energy here the other day. And then his gallop was the second gallop, but not so much. His work, I thought, was good. He galloped out well, but not quite as sharp as I thought I'd seen in the Gulfstream Works. Today, he looked like he wanted to do more today.
He looked good today.
Yeah,
he looked
good today.
He looked as good as he's looked all since he got here.
Good energy level, so I like to see that. I'm waiting to see them take him over to the gate, unless I've missed it. I'm not sure if they have. They might have yesterday. I didn't really. No, he wasn't out yesterday. So I'm waiting for them to get a couple of schooling sessions in over there. We know he's got a gate issue. Again, he's another one that, like Tappet Trice, if he comes away slow, maybe even more so than Tappet Trice, if he comes away slow, it's going to be awful tough for him to overcome that. You can't make that kind of a middle move going a mile and a quarter and hope to have anything left at the end than he made in the Florida Derby. I'm just against those two because of the inexperience. And, you know, one of these days, another horse with three starts is going to come along and win the Derby. I'm just not so sure it's this year.
Let's talk about the shift gears. Talk about the Brad Cox pairings. And Cox comes in, you know, with a serious hand.
Really serious hand. I mean, of the four, Angel of Empire perhaps has looked slightly the best of them from a workout standpoint. Gallop outs are good. Energy level is good. But Verifying, who, you know, came out of a huge effort in the Bluegrass, and that might be the best of the preps from a numbers standpoint or just from, in general, a class standpoint. Hard effort there, obviously, for him, dueling most of the way and just coming out on the short end with Tappet Trice. But he's looked good in his works here. He was better than Hit Show two works back. He had a different work partner the other day, and he was much the best there with Tyler on him. Had good energy galloping out. I like the way he's coming into this race, and obviously off that effort in the Bluegrass, it puts him right into me in my top four somewhere. I haven't sorted them out yet, but he's got to be right there.
So, Angel of Empire, Verifying.
It shows worked good the other day too. When he worked with Verifying, he was down on the inside and maybe not too comfortable in there, being on the rail, pinned down there by Verifying. I thought he looked better in his work the other day when he was outside his workmate. I thought he was definitely better this week than the week before. But, you know, he's doing well, too. So those three, I think, are all contenders for sure.
Well, and then Jace's Road, how on edge is he, do you think, in terms of a pace setting, you know, coming into a race where he's expected to go right to the front?
Yeah, I mean, you wouldn't see that in his works. He hasn't been really headstrong in his works. He broke a length in front of Angel of Empire the other day, and then they went pretty much evenly for 5/8 of a mile, although Florent Drew had to ask Jace's Road a little bit at the end to keep up with Angel of Empire, and then he lost contact a little bit on the gallop out. I think he's definitely fourth in that pecking order, and I'd be really surprised if he made any waves in this race other than maybe as an early factor.
Mike Welch with us. And, Mike, there's a few horses that we'll have to talk about later in the week when we see them, you know, several more mornings, like Practical Move and Reincarnate.
Yeah, I really haven't seen enough of
those horses yet. Right.
Skinner came out late at 9 o'clock, just galloped an easy mile. Didn't have the prettiest way of going, but I've never seen him before, so I just don't know.
Days.
His work the other day was really good visually watching it. He galloped out very strong. I just happened to be talking to Todd yesterday, way after training, just got him alone, and he said one of the horses he was not happy that Skinner drew in. He said he's one of the horses that he fears in there, the way he's been working. He's got a new rider. I think
the trainer's pretty sharp.
And the trainer is, yeah, he kind of knows what he's doing.
Well, Reincarnate, while we're on the topic too, the West Coast horses with Practical Move, did you watch the Reincarnate work?
I did. He was pretty keyed up early, which leads me to believe he might be an early factor
in here as well.
He's a big, good-looking horse, and you know, he went 46 and change and did it pretty easily once he finally came to hand. I'm just not so sure he's quite up to the level of these. Practical Move's work looked terrific visually. Again, the big question, and I'm probably the 200th person to bring that up here, but the breeding does not suggest a mile and a quarter. But, you know, he couldn't have looked better in that work the other day.
Let's get the Japanese question out of the way. For you, Dermot Sodagaki,
I don't know what to make of him. I really don't know what to do. I don't know, you know, it's comparing apples to oranges with what he's faced over there and what he's going to meet here. His work the other day was okay, certainly not anything special. He came home in 22-4, but he was asked from the top of the stretch to the wire like he was in a two-year-old sale. So I think a lot of these horses could go 22-4 if you asked him like that. He's going to work again tomorrow. Maybe you get a little clearer picture watching him a second time work. His gallop today, you know, didn't put you over the moon either watching him today. He was swapping leads down the stretch. He had his head up a little bit. I think he did that the other day too, if I recall, coming down the lane, throwing his head a little bit. But we'll see. He's supposed to work with Continuar again tomorrow. Continuar really has to prove himself tomorrow in that work. Off of what I saw the other day, I'm almost wouldn't be surprised if he came out and the Cyclone Mischief came in. But we'll see. He gets another chance tomorrow. Maybe with a work over the track, he'll be better tomorrow. But I'm not confident that's what we're going to see. But we'll give him a second chance.
I want to talk about two of the way I described it earlier this morning with Byron King and Kevin Kilroy and James Scully, the unconventional approaches, Mike. Disarm, who, I came here never expecting to have to worry about him, and the same way I felt about Confidence Game off 10 weeks, and yet that move on the turn Saturday, it was eye-catching.
Yeah, no, he was very, very sharp. He was keyed up, too, and then leads me to believe he's going to be forwardly placed also. He won his first three aces in 34 and change, I think, and finished in 59 and a couple. And he looked good this morning. That's more important. He looked good this morning coming out of the work. You know, he missed some training last week. He was conspicuous by his absence several days. I didn't see him. I don't think anybody else saw him because I don't think he was out. But his work was good. He looked good today. He was my number two star after Tapit Trice this morning among the colts galloping. So we'll see. I'm still skeptical of A, being away that long without a race, and B, he's never been beyond a mile and a 16th, let alone a mile and an eighth. So to stretch him to a mile and a quarter is asking a lot. But he seems to have bounced back out of whatever kept him out of training for a few days and look good today.
What do you do with this arm off the three-week turnaround?
You know, there isn't a race on his paper that's good enough to win the Derby, but he certainly seems to be thriving coming in. He had a very good work last week. I have commented before the work and coming out of the work, his gallops have been strong. He looks like he's a horse that's going to move forward. Whether moving forward is enough to get him at least a slice at a big price, it could be. I mean, I would not be surprised if he, you know, came, you know, rallied in to get second, third, fourth, maybe, but I'm not sure he's quite good enough to beat the better ones in here. But I wouldn't summarily dismiss him as well as he seems to be doing coming out of the Lexington.
You had a couple of horses that one that's going to work tomorrow and one that worked yesterday, so there'll be plenty of focus. Sun Thunder for McPeak will come back out tomorrow. He's run in three straight races, Mike, of a mile and an eighth or more, which, you know, putting mileage on tires works for this race. And then Rocket Can, who seems to have some backing.
Yeah, he looked good in his work with the blinkers on. It's the second one with blinkers. He's going to run in blinkers. And, you know, Bill thinks it might have got him a couple of lengths of improvement with a little more focus there. And, you know, I like what I saw. I'm just not sure he's good enough. You know, he was certainly no match for Forte the first time they met in the Fountain of Youth. And I think he's going to have to find a lot more than a length or two. But he looked good. He's training well, and he's dappled out, and he looks terrific. And it's Bill Mott. You know, Bill's had a heck of a year. So it's hard to discount anything Bill puts out there these days. And Sun Thunder, I was hoping to see a little bit more improvement with the blinkers last week. Going to get another chance to see that tomorrow, so see how that goes.
Then you mentioned Cyclone Mischief. Should he somehow get in? He's looked fine out there.
He's looked fine. That's about it. I saw more from him on certain occasions down at the Gulfstream this winter, certainly before that big comeback allowance win. I liked his race at the Fountain of Youth better than most people because they thought he was on a dead rail there. He was clearly third best behind Mage and Forte in the Florida Derby. And what I see here, he's just been fine. I'm not sure he's going to, you know, be a factor in here if he does get in. And I like to see him get in, though, for Dale. I mean, you know, Dale's a Louisville guy. You'd like to see the Louisville guy get in, and probably deserves to be in more than the Japanese Continuar does. So we'll see how that shakes out over the next few days.
That leaves us with three horses that haven't come up. And, of course, Raise Kane is not preparing here, so we won't get to see him gallop until tomorrow.
Right. I haven't seen him. I didn't even get a chance to look at his work over there. Two fills. I loved what his work looked like on tape. And I love what he looked like in the flesh this morning.
Good looking horse.
Yeah, he looked terrific. He had blinkers on. He runs in blinkers. He gallops in blinkers. He was pretty strong today. And he is a very good looking horse. So he's definitely a horse I've moved way up on my list since I've gotten here. And I haven't even seen him before today. But just watching that work, it was very impressive looking. And he's coming off a huge, huge race, too. So he's obviously thriving at the moment, which is what you want to see from these guys coming into the Derby.
Well, we'll close out with a horse you have seen all winter, Lord Miles.
He shocked me in the wood. He'll shock me in here if he's, you know, part of the puzzle at the end. He just came out this morning for the first time. He jogged. You know, he's not a sensational workhorse. His work the other day I saw on tape from Gulfstream, just pretty average for me. But that's, you know, he doesn't really do much more than that. That's why, you know, even when he won the wood, if he had been coming off like a super work where I could have said this horse is, you know, maybe sitting on a huge race, he really didn't. I know he had trouble in his previous two races, and I know Safi had been high on him all along. And I know before I think it was the Holy Bull, he said I wouldn't change, you know, hands with anybody here, and then he didn't get a great trip. And, you know, he proved Safi right by winning the wood. And, again, that might have just been the quality of the competition in there. That might have been the weakest of all the Derby preps. It's historically, it's been for a long time now. I don't know the last time we've had a horse come out of the wood and be relevant. And certainly it's been a long, long time since one came out of the wood and won the Derby. So, but I'm glad to see he's here. It's good to have another South Florida entrant in the race, so wish him well.
Well, speaking of South Florida, did we include Darth Vader? Did we got a Darth Vader in reference?
We spoke about him. Yeah.
Okay.
Her.
Well,
she's my favorite of all of these. Obviously, she'll never owe me any money ever again.
No. or many, many users of the Clocker, DRF Clocker Report, that push of yours was that was unbelievable.
Well, she made it easy. I mean, you just write what you see. And, you know, what she had shown in the morning was terrific going into the race. What she's shown coming out of the race has been terrific. But, again, at some point, no matter how good they work, you know, when you look at their form or their distance limitations, and that might be her biggest issue here is, like I said, getting a mile and an eighth.
We talked about Major Dude, but, you know, you've been clocking all mornings long. Anything?
Some horses I've seen that are working well. I'm just not sure, you know, which ones are going to be in Friday and Saturday. I will say, just off the top of my head, Wolfie's Dynaghost looked terrific working on the grass yesterday for Jonathan Thomas. He had Johnny Velasquez was aboard. The horse is coming off some big races on the synthetics.
Woodford Reserve? I think that's where he's going, yeah.
Right,
now it's the old Forster.
Right. I mean, look, it's a tough race, and the defending champ is back. He worked yesterday, too. Santon worked on the turf It's hard to keep track of the days after a while. But Wolfie looked really good, and he had trained really well going into his last race at Turfway and ran to that. He had been training on the synthetic at Gulfstream and ran to that on the synthetic. But this was the grass yesterday. I mean, he galloped out better than we had 16 turf works yesterday in about 8 minutes. And I thought of all of them, his gallop out was the best of them all. So we'll see. I mean, he's going to have to step forward again, but he probably should be a big price in there.
How about that? And your review, watching for clots or anything out of the turf course, it seems terrific.
Yeah. I mean, last week they had turf works the day after. We got some fairly significant rain.
Yeah.
Not a clod kicked up. You can't, you know, they sound great going over it. Same way yesterday. So tip of the hat to Churchill Downs for, you know, they had an issue and they dealt with it, and seems like now they've got it 1,000% right. It looks great out there.
They kept saying that, and the agronomists all said it just needs to knit. It just needs to for the roots to, you know, to take.
Yeah, I think, you know, because it was the Derby weekend, they rushed it back a little quick last year, and that was probably the undoing. If they had two or three more weeks to like you say, let it settle and take hold, things would have been a different story. But it's in great shape now.
Maybe Gulfstream should talk to him.
No comment.
Mike Welch, everybody. DRF Welch. And the report Wednesday or Thursday
hopefully
afternoon?
Hopefully we'll have Friday's report Thursday. By late Wednesday, maybe.
Wednesday.
And
great.
Hopefully. And we'll have Saturday's report by late Thursday. That's what we're shooting for.
Outstanding. And we will get the big DRF Welch Derby Oaks reveals later in the week.
Yeah, I'm still...
You're still chewing.
Working on that. You know, first of all... Never make a pick before you see the post position draw, especially in the Derby. So we'll see.
Mike Welch, thank you. Always tremendous. Mike Welch, everybody, and you just got every horse and the AEs for Derby and for Oaks, and you even got a couple of extra pushes, and we will look forward to Mike's final decisions. John White's been listening in and taking notes.
Absolutely. Mike does such a fabulous job. And, you know, you guys were talking about the Oaks. And looking at the Oaks, it's similar to the Derby to me in that there's not really a lot of early pace in this Oaks. And Wet Pete is such a come-from-behinder that is going to be a solid favorite in this race and doesn't bring strong buyer speed figure power to the race, which to me suggests she could be vulnerable as the favorite. And you guys were talking about Flying Connection, and she's really flying under the radar, and I don't see much in the way of anybody else in this race that's going to go out there and show the speed that she's going to show. She's on the top of her game. She's got the pedigree. She's by Nyquist out of A Quiet American Mare. You mentioned, Steve, the 85 buyer. I mean, look, that puts her in the mix with everybody, including Wet Paint. Wet Paint's top buyer is the 89 out of the Fantasy. Other than that, 83. I mean, this Flying Connection fits with everybody in this race, but she's got the pace advantage in this race. And it wasn't like she was weakening at the end of that Sunland Derby at a mile and a 16th. You look back as a two-year-old, she was drilled by Intelligent Lies at Del Mar, but that was, you know, early in her career. She's really blossomed for a guy that I think is a very good trainer in Todd Fincher. This filly, to me, at the price, whatever she's going to be, I think is very, very playable in that Kentucky Oaks from a pace standpoint.
Sometimes when you go through this stuff and you got certain preconceived notions, and you go back and look, and your certain things have been established, and you say, wait a minute. What's this filly done wrong, or what's this horse done wrong? And that is the case with her. And we got plenty of respect for Todd Fincher. This is a Nyquist who, out of A Quiet American Mare, some interesting things. A $250,000 Keeneland Yearling. There's some things to respect. All right, John, let's get back to our conversation. There's been so much speculation as to this morning line and where the anticipated movement might come from. And I want to take your temperature again and your pulse on the pricing and if you think anything has changed and what might change between now and Saturday.
Well, first of all, I look forward to Mike Battaglia's official morning line later today. You know, he's been doing the morning line for the Kentucky Derby since 1974. That was the year, the 100th Kentucky Derby that Little Current probably should have won, had an absolutely atrocious trip, and then won the Preakness by 7 and the Belmont by 7. And the last morning line that was made without Mike Battaglia was Secretariat in 1973, and he was the even money favorite on the official morning line in the program. I made him 4-5 in my high school newspaper. Yes, I was making odds in my high school newspaper in 1973 and picked Secretariat right on top. And Secretariat went off at 3-2. So he was an overlay from my 4-5 and an overlay from the even money in the program. As far as this year, here's one of the dynamics that's going to be fascinating to see to me, Steve. And that is what we've seen in the past when we've had a huge long shot win the Derby. What happens in not only the next year, but the next few years.
Right.
And we saw that with Giacomo in 2005 when he won it 50-1. And then we especially saw it with Mind That Bird when he won it 50-1. And for the next few years, we were not seeing the gigantic long shots that we were seeing before that, because people feel like anybody could win the race. And so these horses that a lot of people think are going to be 80-1, 90-1, 70-1, whatever, might not be. And remember, this is not your normal betting pool, because there's a lot of unsophisticated money betting into the pool. Now, the biggest money is the sharp money. And another thing about Forte is the factor of our man from Houston putting money into the pool, if he's going to do what he's been doing in recent years. So Forte, I think he's going to be in that 7-2. It's one of the things that was interesting in your roundtable discussion. They mentioned that Nyquist was 2.3-1. But one reason Nyquist, I think, would be a shorter price than Forte is because Nyquist was undefeated. And when you have an undefeated horse that went in with the number of stakes wins that your panel pointed out with Nyquist, that draws strong betting. Forte not being undefeated, even though his record is so strong overall, I think raises the price somewhat. So that's why I don't think he'll be 2-1 or 5-2. I would expect 3-1, 7-2, or 4-1. Now, Tampa Trice, I'd make 4-1. That's probably lower than most people would make him. But I honestly think, Steve, Tampa Trice, it wouldn't shock me sitting there Saturday if he actually gives Forte a run for his money for favoritism in this race. I really think that's possible. Tampa Trice, with the back-to-back wins of Tampa Bay and the Bluegrass, and so many people have been impressed with that Bluegrass, and rightfully so. And this horse costing as much as he did at public auction and coming in with this winning streak that he has, I think he's going to get a lot of play. And I think he's going to really battle for favoritism with Forte. You know, everybody's conceding that Forte will be the favorite. I think he will be the favorite, but it wouldn't shock me if Tampa Trice actually did go favorite in this race.
Interesting.
After those two, then you come up to Angel of Empire. I would make 6. And he's getting a lot of support, again, rightfully so, based on what he's been doing. That Arkansas Derby, you know, really was one of the most impressive races we've seen by this class. And it looks like the mile and a quarter he's going to love, and a lot of people are backing him, and it makes sense. Those are the only three I see in single digits. Then we go to the double digits, and I think Dermo Sotogaki, Practical Move, I have them both 10, and then you go to 12-1, and I think Kings Barnes, Two Fills, and Verifying in it. I'm seeing enough respect coming along, perhaps, for your pick, Two Fills. And don't forget, he's got the biggest buyer in the whole race, a 101, at least that shows. According to Randy Moss, Dermo Sotogaki, he estimates he would have got a 106 or 107 in the UAE Derby, but that's not showing, and it's got to show for it to really drive the betting. Dermo is a real question mark. He could go under. I like putting him at 10 because I think he could go under 10. I think he could go higher than 10. In Vegas, he's been pretty much 12-1, and they haven't driven down. So Dermo could be one of those that we're expecting to get more play than he'll actually get. And then after those 12-1 shots of Kings, Barnes, Two Fills, and Verifying at 12, then you go to the 20-1 shots for me, which would be Hit Show, Confidence Game, Mage. The Confidence Game is starting to get kind of buzz and could be kind of a wise guy horse. He's got the good work out there. That's getting buzz. And even with the 10-week layoff, I think he's a horse that may get some support in this race more than people think. So, and I would put Skinner at 20. Even though he's getting into the race kind of at the last minute from the also eligible list, you know, with that 100, you know, he's got such a strong buyer showing on his resume. And the fact that Sheriffs has won the race before, and it was interesting that what Mike Walsh said, that Todd Pletcher was wanting to not
see
Skinner get, get into the race.
Yeah.
How fascinating is that? That of all these horses, the one horse that Todd Pletcher is fearing is Skinner. So that's really interesting. And then after you get through those 20s, then you go to the 30 and 50 to one shots.
All right, John. Outstanding. I appreciate it. And we'll see what Mike Battaglia's got later this afternoon. We're now, geez, we've only got 15 minutes. I'm in trouble here. John, don't know if we'll get, you obviously have got your column that'll come out at ExpressBet, but any update to your top four?
No, my top four remains, and this isn't how I think they would finish 1, 2, 3, 4. I rank them in the order of how I feel they have the best chance to win the Derby. In other words, I have Practical Move at number one. I feel he has the best chance to win. You know, he has the two fastest mile and a 16th times of the 16 mile and a 16th preps. He also has, people are so in love with the Bluegrass, but Practical Move has the fastest mile and an eighth of all the Kentucky Derby points preps. And I also, Kings Barnes, I have number two. You know, Steve, you talk about a horse that needs to be fit to win the Derby. I know he set an easy pace in the Louisiana Derby, but the sky could be the limit with him. We don't know. He could potentially be a superstar. Probably he isn't, but he could be. He's untested in these races. He's won on three different surfaces, including the quirky Tampa Bay Downs. He overcame trouble to win in his career debut. And what really impresses me about Kings Barnes is he was fast enough to work a quarter in 20 4/5. That kind of blazing speed, yet he has the stamina to win the Louisiana Derby at a mile and 3/16. Not a mile and an eighth, a mile and 3/16. So I like him a lot. I think he's probably going to be in that forward position early that's been so successful in the last 10 Kentucky Derbies. Tappa Trice, I respect a lot. I personally like him a lot better than Forte. I'm concerned about Forte not being first or second at the eighth pole in his last two races, because that indicates to me that he might not be first or second at the eighth pole in this race. And 36, you know, so many of the Kentucky Derby winners in the Kentucky Derby have been 1-2 with an eighth of a mile to go, the vast majority. So that's my big concern, one of them with Forte, along with the declining buyers. And so I like Tappa Trice better than Forte. And then for fourth, I have Angel of Empire. Gee, there's really not much to knock there with that horse. I mean, he is a major player in this race to me. So my 1, 2, 3, 4 Practical Move, Kings Barnes, Tappa Trice, and Angel of Empire. And I'll tell you what, Two Fills to me is not one to overlook in this race by any way, shape, or form. And I think this arm is a live shot to hit the board in this race. And once you're a live shot to hit the board, who knows, like last year, you know, not only did Rich Strike hit the board, he pulled off the 50-1 upset. So that disarm to me is very, very intriguing as a big price horse in this race.
John, fantastic. Thanks for everything, and we'll be recapping when we talk next.
Sounds great, Steve. I look forward to the coverage the rest of the week. This is what your show does. It provides such a service to everybody in this industry. And this week is when you really shine.
Very kind. John White, everybody. Post time, John, on your Twitter. We've got, we got 10 minutes. Let me do two things. There apparently, we will know in 2 hours, essentially, there is some real conflict about where Luis Saez is going to be Friday. And Brad Cox says that Saez is riding the Alice look. So I would expect that, as opposed to Darth Vader, there's some indecision as to, or some uncertainty as to what transpired, and apparently, as you heard from Mike, Michael Yates wasn't 100% sure, so he's looking to. I think he's got to make a decision now about a rider himself. I think Jose Ortiz is still open, actually, for the Oaks, if I'm not mistaken. All right, Mig, we're going to come back to Mig tomorrow. Mig, actually, you know what, Richie, I appreciate it. because I got Pat McKenna to get to, and actually Andy's tied up tomorrow, so we'll push Andy back to Thursday is what he asked for. So we'll get Rich Migliori tomorrow for his, and he'll have the benefit of the post position, and he can talk about how you know, certain horses are going to have to deal with their draw. So let's get to Pat, and we got about 8 minutes to close out the morning and look ahead a little bit to Friday at Belmont Park. And always great. It's been an extended winter, obviously, and at Aqueduct, it was a great winter, and good early spring. And of course, how about that? Pat was expecting me 20 minutes ago. But I was not going to miss we couldn't miss the chance. That was the best opportunity to get Mike's weekend recapping in. All right. Now we'll try one more time. Let's see if we can't pick off. Because now I like the idea of Meg tomorrow, particularly if certain horses end up drawing strange or difficult posts. Pat McKenna is joining us from the New York Racing Association. Good morning.
Morning, Steve.
Sorry for the late arrival.
It's okay.
All right.
Glad to be here.
Well, glad to have you, and was certainly glad to see the headline and the details. I've got it here somewhere of the arrangements with Albany, as legislation will set things in motion toward the $455 million loan to rebuild and reimagine Belmont Park.
Yeah, that's exactly right. On Thursday, Governor Hochul announced the framework of the budget agreement. Just last night, the legislature began releasing the budget bills themselves, so the printed budget bills that they will approve in the coming days. As part of that, as you mentioned, there is a bill that will provide NYRA with a $455 million loan to be repaid over the course of 20 years, so that NYRA can construct a brand new Belmont Park. And that's a word that I found myself uttering frequently the last 6 months, a reimagined Belmont Park. It'll be a facility that honors the history and traditions of Belmont, while also providing the modern amenities and hospitality offerings that world-class venues provide here in 2023, that fans have come to expect. So, incredibly important, obviously a momentous development for New York Racing. I struggle to come up with a more significant racetrack construction project in modern times. It's a really gratifying end. Obviously, they have not yet voted. They still do need to vote. Budget bills are being printed as we speak, but this is exactly what we had hoped for on behalf of the thoroughbred racing community in New York, the thousands of people, the thousands of New York families that are reliant on a thriving sport to support families, put children through college. You know, we're lucky enough to see that day in, day out, but ultimately, New York State leadership, from the governor on down, recognized the importance of this project as an economic development project that will create thousands of jobs, generate billions in economic activity, both now and in the future, guarantee the return of the Breeders' Cup to New York for the first time since 2005. Another enormous event for Long Island, New York, and the region. So it's a big deal. This is what we have been working towards for the better part of 2 years. And obviously this is a conversation that has sort of been at the forefront for far longer than that. So this is what we had hoped for.
Well, there's been so much, and you and I have tracked this quite a bit, and also with Dave O'Rourke, particularly Summers at Saratoga. In fact, I mean, honestly, I can recall having conversations with Charlie Hayward toward this, and so it's been in the works for a long time. You fold in the New York, the This Is New York Racing project or initiative that, you know, was really an agglomeration of all the parties that stand to benefit, including unions and chambers of commerce on the island. And I mean, there's so much that's gone into this, Pat, and it's got to be very gratifying. And you know what? It should also, point should be made that Albany, for their part in this, they also did what they told you they were going to do when they said we've got to take care of Buffalo first and the stadium project there, and then it'll be your turn next year. And to their credit, they followed through.
No, that's exactly right. And this has been a lengthy process. You know, it takes multiple years to get projects like this done through a state budget process that is complicated, sometimes convoluted, sometimes confusing. Things are flying around at warp speed, but the addition of the be able to speak in one voice. I go back to the rally we had on a dreary winter Monday in the state capitol. You know, we had 150 people who took time out of their own schedules to travel up from Belmont, to travel down from Saratoga County throughout the state to demonstrate, you know, what this sport is all about. And it's the people that make it work. I've heard Dave O'Rourke say on many occasions that this is not about, you know, this is far less about a facility or a place and far more about securing the future of the sport downstate so that it can continue to be a source of good job and economic impact and an investment. And that's what our elected leaders recognize, that this is a $455 million investment in the future of horse racing, in the future of Long Island, and it's an investment in our communities.
Well, the work that's gone into it, a lot of it, you know, goes unseen. So wanted to acknowledge. And I saw the avalanche of congratulations from all the people that interact with you on social media.
And this will, as the bill specifically says, we have never shied away from the conversation around ACRON. This will result in the consolidation of downstate racing to Belmont Park. We believe strongly that that is a critical element of the future of thoroughbred racing in downstate New York. So that is why that was also a priority. We love Aqueduct. We just spent 8 months at Aqueduct.
Yeah.
But the sport has evolved, and to have two tracks 8 miles away no longer makes sense.
No.
We no longer train at Aqueduct. We no longer stable horses at Aqueduct. So, you know, and that is our viewpoint, that we're going to make an enormous investment here in one facility. And, you know, to have small businesses, trainers, be able to know that racing and training is going to be at Belmont for, you know, 10 months out of the year. I mean, to be able to have that certainty when this project is done, you know, we think will be an enormous advantage for racing in New York. And ultimately, you know, it's also, I think, one of the compelling arguments is that these are New York State properties. Aqueduct goes back to New York State so that they can develop it in whatever way they see fit, whether it's housing, entertainment. But that's a huge asset, and that's a win for New York taxpayers. It was appraised at $1 billion without anything on it at all. You'd struggle to find open space, a parcel of land that size, anywhere in the five boroughs. It's probably worth more than $1 billion.
Yeah, exactly.
Belmont Park is a state asset that you know, at the end of this franchise in 2033, if they determine that Naira is no longer the franchisee, then we'll hand back a property that is dramatically improved, that is a world-class venue for the future of racing. So those are just some of the high points.
Pat, looking forward to Belmont Stakes Festival, now just 5+ weeks away, and I appreciate this. Congratulations to everybody at the association. We will talk soon, and I'll see you soon.
Thanks, Steve.
Pat McKenna, everybody, and the good news, downstate. What a fun 3 hours. I hope you enjoyed. Pat McKenna, John White, Mike Welch, Scully, King, and Kilroy. The accounting firm you didn't know you needed. Replay 6 to 9 here on SiriusXM tomorrow. Back with you for the Tuesday edition, 9 o'clock tomorrow. Archive and podcast as soon as KC can post them. The draw, 2 o'clock. Talk to you tomorrow, everybody. Thanks.
It's At the Races with Steve Bick on SiriusXM Radio.
Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health and safety. And we endorse the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's groups. Just a few of the reasons why you should join us in Pennsylvania, the premier place to breed and race.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets.